Jim Curran has a 16-acre hill farm in County Clare, where he is a commercial grower of fruit and vegetables, and he also keeps beef animals and two working horses. His approach, while intensive, is ecological. Here he talks about how he marries high production with nature. Hi Jim, thanks for joining me today. You run a very successful market garden in East County Clare on 16 acres, where you're both a commercial grower and a teacher. But just to paint a picture of this farm for us, what does it look like? What does it sound like? Can you tell us about your farm and your farming system?
So it's a small hill farm of 16 acres, as you said. So it's what would be classified as marginal hill land. If you look further up the hill here, you'd see quite a few thousand acres of Sitka spruce planted at this stage. Now, it would have been land that I would have helped neighbors farm in 30, 40 years ago. But nowadays it's planted with Sitka spruce. So the Sitka spruce has up until a few years ago, has been coming closer and closer to my farm. So I like to think that my little farm, it's farmed organically, and basically it's very, very intensive. I always have somebody employed here with me. We're producing a multitude of crops. Then what you'll see is you'll see a few sucklers, and you'll also see a couple of workhorses, of course. So it's an intensive little 16-acre holding. That would have been typical of this farm of this hill at one stage or another, but now it's a different type of farming that goes on here.
And while it's intensive, it's still working around the kind of mechanics and nature and stuff. And I suppose the foundation to all of this is soil. So how important is good soil to everything you do?
So it's everything. Like, I mean, the land, the soil is marginal, so the pH is low. The clay content is high, the iron content is high. And that type of land in itself would be very difficult to grow horticultural crops in, to grow food crops in. Now, you can grow quite reasonably good quality grass, extensive grassland with a wide variety of plants in the grassland. But to actually grow horticultural crops, you need to improve the soil type substantially. So what I've done is I've increased the organic matter, I've increased the structure, I've increased its drainage ability, and I brought it up to this kind of fertile 2 or 3 acres of land that is very, very high yielding and very productive. And I've done that over time.
And how important is the compost element to all of this?
So the compost is key. The compost is key, but it's not just key to my holding. The compost is key to every holding because when we talk about organics and we talk about even broader to organics, the material that's compostable on our farm should really stay within the farm gate and it should be utilized. And not alone from this compost are you getting, the major nutrients, nitrogen, potash, phosphorus, not alone from that, and some minor nutrients, but also what you're harvesting by composting compostable product is you're harvesting the biology from your own farm and you're keeping it in-house. So it's a very, very important part of farming that you treat these what is going back into nature, that you treat it properly and you utilize it on your farm, be it whether you have a small acreage or you have an extensive acreage.
If I have 1 acre or if I have 200 acres, are the mechanics of making compost different?
The mechanics are exactly the same, whether you're making 500 kilos of compost or even a corporation bin of compost, or you're making 600 tons. The mechanics are the same.
What does good compost, I mean, look like?
So I often say good compost looks like chocolate cake. That's
Sounds
what
good.
some really nice chocolate cake. So it should have this moistness to it, not excessively wet, not excessively dry. It should have this lovely, rich, moist feeling to it and visual look. It should be dark in color by nature. When you look at it, you should see a variety of ingredients. You won't see those leaves you put in, or you won't see that straw you put in. But what you'll see is you'll see You'll see the ingredients, a bit like you're looking at a chocolate cake or a nice fruit cake. You won't ex exactly see all the ingredients that you put into your nice fruit cake, but you will understand that there was a variety of ingredients that went in there. It needs to be air-filled and it should be sweet smelling.
I find it interesting. You kind of have mentioned you don't come from a good soil kind of land as such, and yet you've made all the compost on your land, and now you have really good soil. Is that correct, Jim, in saying that you can do it all within your own gate, irrelevant of your starting point?
That is totally correct. That is totally correct. And I suppose I'm going to add a little caveat now. What's coming, because what's happening is that farming is changing rapidly. There's new and new information coming to us about how we can farm and the potential of farming. That's changing rapidly. And where we are going, this is kind of a little bit putting the horse before the cart, putting the cart before the horse. But where our future is around compost making is our it's the biology of our compost that's actually going to be the one time we would have thought about the quantity, whereas nowadays we have to think about the quality and we have to think about the biology. And that in a way, this compost in the future is going to be an inoculant. It's going to do a much wider acreage than what we've done previously. So that's where we're going as farmers. But that's for class two almost.
Okay, so coming back to class one, what is, I mean, I know we can look everything up on Wikipedia, but what is your best formula, step-by-step guide to making good compost?
So the first thing is we have to think that we're working in an Irish context. And sometimes what you read from New Zealand, America, Australia, where it's a totally different climate and a totally different light penetration. Okay. So we're in an Irish context. So the first thing about compost making is that 9 times out of 10, it should be made in full sun. We need to get into the heat, get into the sun, and harvest the goodness of the sun. In the making, in our compost heap situation, we need maximum heat basically at that level, ambient heat. So that's the first thing. Then the second thing is that the compost heap cannot be waterlogged at any one time. It needs to have dry feet. And then the next thing is that you need to think about a variety of ingredients. So every single ingredient you put into your compost heap is classified as green or brown. It's a very simple classification. So it's not by color, it's by how, if you took what an ingredient that you're thinking, can I put it into my compost heap? And you put it into a plastic bag just temporarily and you seal the plastic bag, what would happen to that ingredient? And if the ingredient that you put into the plastic bag and you denied it air became like gunk, that is essentially a green ingredient. So this is only for classification purposes now. So you can imagine if you put grass into a plastic bag and you sealed it and it would become like gunk. If you put quite smelly and quite wet, if you put farmyard manure into a plastic bag and you sealed it would become kind of smelly, or it would become wetter and it would become gunky. Whereas if you put leaves into a plastic bag on their own, they would probably become dry and they would become kind of musty in smell. So whatever you put into, when you put a product into a bag and it becomes if it's quick to rot and it becomes gunky, it's green in material. So that's one thing. And then if you put a material into a bag and it became dry, it becomes brown in material. So let's classify what the ingredients are. So you have all these ingredients on a farm and you classify them into brown and green. So you have old silage would be green. Then you have straw would be brown. So let's classify all our ingredients. That's the first thing. The second thing is that in the making of your compost heap, you have to think, I want 50% brown and I want 50% green in my compost heap. Okay, so that's the next thing. And as in quantities. So if you're making a compost heap and you put on 6 inches of green material, what you need to do is you also need to counteract that with 6 inches of brown material. So if you think of it, yeah. So if you look at it in a physical way, so every time you put on a green layer, you put on a brown layer. Okay. So then you've got your brown and green ratio, and they're equal in consistency.
So, Jim, what's the most suitable materials for compost? Is there anything I should avoid?
So anything that's compostable can be used in your compost heap. And so basically anything that will break down and would return to nature can be used in your compost heap. Naturally enough, anything that has a toxic quality to it. So by that I mean if it had residues of oil, if it had residues of plastic, it should not be used in a compost heap.
So, say some of the most common things around a farmyard, like in many cases, is manure. Is there a better type of manure for compost? Horse, sheep, chicken, cattle, or does it really matter?
Okay, so any type of manure can be used. The smaller the animal, the more potent the manure is in the compost heap, and the more a stimulant it is, and the more it has to give to the compost heap.
And
So any type can be used.
any type can be used. And so you were talking before about green or brown kind of different elements, and that you have 50% of each to go into your compost heap. So things like it, can I bring things in from outside the farm gate, like seaweed? I mean, I know we were talking about everything should can be within the farm gate, but is seaweed a good one to include?
Yes, it is. And then if we just went with the classification, so seaweed would be quick to rot if you put it in a plastic bag, and it would go a certain amount gunky. So that's a green ingredient, seaweed, and it's a very valuable ingredient.
So green ingredients off the top of my head, we're talking grass, manure, seaweeds, and then brown might be straw, wool,
Straw, leaves,
leaves.
chips, wood chips, chipped fine, soft wood chip, radial wood chip would be green.
And then, as far as I know, with my limited knowledge of composting, you have to aerate it. How often do I have to aerate the compost? How often should I do it?
So we have our ingredients, we have our brown and our green. And this will partially answer your question. And we start building our compost heap. And let's imagine that we've assembled all the ingredients and we're going to build a compost heap today. So we have our various ingredients. So we come along, and the very first thing we start with is we start with a brown layer. And that is very typically straw. And what it is it's fluffed up straw. So you've got to get lots of air into that straw. So you fluff it up and you put down 10 inches of this fluffed up material of the straw. So you spread that out nice and evenly. Okay. And on top of that, then immediately on top of that brown layer goes a green layer. And the thinner the green layer is, the better, because you don't want to becoming anaerobic, and you want to harvest the goodness out of the materials that are in the green layer. So let's say you put on 3 or 4 inches of a green layer on top of your 10 inches of brown. So you put on 3 or 4 inches, and that day then, or immediately, what you do is you put on 4 inches of brown material, and then you come on and you put on another green layer, whatever thickness it is. Remember, the thinner it is, the better. And you counteract that with a brown layer immediately. So to answer your question a little bit, Bridget, you see what you're doing is you're putting on 50% green, 50% brown. And if you're putting it on, if you're counteracting the green on the day, you're introducing a lot of air into the heap.
Mm-hmm.
And the thinner the layers of green, as I said, the better it is. And you continue up along with your heap and you go brown, green, brown, green, brown, green. And you eventually finish off with a brown layer on top. You need to cover it for a few reasons. One reason is that if you leave it exposed to the rain, it will soak the rainwater and it will become anaerobic without air. It'll implode into itself and it'll become anaerobic. So that's one reason why. The second reason why you need to cover it is if you leave it exposed to the elements, you're going to get a certain amount of leaching of nutrients into the groundwater. So it's actually quite important to cover it.
You've kind of made your layers, you walk so away, have a cup of tea, leave it for a week or two. What happens?
One choice is that if you've met it properly and you never touch it and you leave it like that, it will take 1 year to come into compost. So mm-hmm. So it's what we call a static heap. It's not covered and it takes a year to come into compost. The second choice is that if you turn it after 3 months, and if you turn it four times, it'll come into compost much quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So the more frequent, once you've made your compost heap, if you made a compost heap today, and if you turned it every day for the next 18 days, you would have compost in 18 days' time.
Wow. And is that the same if I have a 300-acre tillage farm, big heap in the kind of, you know, out in the yard sort of thing that I'm, if I come and turn it with my tractor every day or whatever, it will speed up the process?
It will speed up the process. So we'll say that, so if you look at the county councils, the corporations in their composting facilities, what they're doing is they're turning it very frequently in order to manufacture this product so as they can get it back out of the gate because they have a space limitation to them. And with the person that has 300 acres, what happens for them is that they're actually making the compost heap out in a field during the summer months. So kind of late spring, summer months, and they have a time restriction on them, is that they have to have it covered, they have to have it spread by the end of October, because they cannot spread farmyard manure or compost after the end of October. So the people that have 300 acres, they tend to turn it in order to bring it into compost quicker, in order to have it spread within the restricted time period.
And is there a certain temperature or anything that my compost should be, that I should be looking at, or?
There is. So you make your heap, and the temperature should rise steadily in the heap over the first 7 days to 63 degrees centigrade. It should hover for 4 or 5 days at between 63 and 70 degrees centigrade. And after the 12th day of making it, the temperature should begin to drop slowly to about 30 degrees centigrade or thereabouts. And that is actually very important, because in the climbing of the temperature and staying at between 63 to 70 for 6 or 7 days, you kill all the unnecessary weed seeds that are in the ingredients that you put into the compost heap. The second thing that you do is you, for want of a better word, you call in the nutrients that are in the materials that you put into the compost heap, and you get them to talk to one another to make this perfect compost. And the result of that is when you come to eventually spread this compost, it's a highly fertile, biologically active product that you're putting onto your land.
It's a real chemistry, biology experiment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
But you have to get it
definitely
right as well, because
you
if you,
have.
yeah.
But what I want to say to you, Bridget, is that little bit of information that I'm just after saying frightens people. And I'm going to encourage people, do not be frightened by that. It's a bit like cooking, it's a bit like baking. What you can do is you can observe your ingre you can get your place to put your to situate your compost heap, pick your spot, get your ingredients, make up your layers, observe the ingredients, and then have your soil thermometer, put it in, see what happens with the does it behave itself? Does it increase in temperature? And how did it increase in temperature? And basically begin to learn how to make compost.
If I'm either a arable farmer or a market gardener, do I spread the compost everywhere, or do I assess where it's needed and put it on just that? I mean, do you keep spreading compost year on year, or do you does your soil arrive at this amazing destination and then that, okay, I can leave that field for a while now?
So the ideal case scenario is to think of your compost as an inoculant, as a stimulant of soil biology. And the ideal case scenario would be that you'd spread this compost over your entire holding very, very thinly. That's the ideal case scenario. So you'd be putting it on. So to give you an impression on it, so you have a bed in a polytunnel that's 75 centimeters wide, that's 30 meters long. So that would be a bed. And the ideal scenario would be that you'd be putting on 3 buckets of this compost onto a cover crop on that bed, and that would be your fertility, and it would grow your crops for the year. So very, very thinly, a highly fertile, a highly biological rich product. That's the ideal case scenario.
Have you seen nature kind of respond to when you have really good compost out there, like both above and below the ground?
Yes, so it greatly increases the worm life. It greatly increases all insect life in the soil. So there's no you're dealing with a very kind of a loose soil. That's when you scratch away the surface, you see lots of insects, that type of thing. And then the response to using compost above the soil is that there's definitely a major increase in bird life. And a little thing is that you actually have to be careful not to use too much compost on your beds, because then you can just see. There can be a lot of blackbirds. There can be a lot of other small birds, and they're scratching away looking for millipedes and looking for all sorts of insects, and it can actually cause havoc. They're pulling out your nice lettuce plants and that type of thing.
So, Jim, one thing I was thinking about is vermin. I mean, compost heaps in my brain kind of might attract rats and stuff. Is this a problem? And if it is, how do we deal with it?
Okay, so it potentially could be a problem. So one thing to consider about it, if the compost heap is too green, if there's too much green material going into it, you will have vermin in the heap. If the compost heap is too brown, so too much straw, you will have vermin. The vermin will, if it's too green, they will go in for a food source. And if it's too brown, they will go in for nesting. So to
Okay.
bring that in context, then when you put on your green material, if you observed that you were having vermin, you could think, I have to put on, when I put on my green material, I have to put it on in thinner layers, and I have to be more proactive with my brown. So that would be a control to having it excessively green. And likewise, if you put on brown and you observe that you had vermin, as in straw, you could think, I'm actually putting on my layers of brown are too high, too thick, and I'm giving them a nesting habitat. So it's in the ingredients is the attraction to the vermin.
Okay, so it's in the ingredients. So you don't necessarily need like a fortress around your compost to protect,
No.
like a big, you know, it doesn't have to be in cemented areas, walls, or no.
No, and like, okay, we observe, say here we have a farm cat, we have a farm dog. That's our control of vermin, a certain amount. But I'd always be very mindful up around the compost heaps, and I keep a close eye out. And but I put a lot of emphasis. If I see a couple of my workers or a couple of the students, if I see them putting on excessively amounts of straw, or even the tomato plants as an example, I would think that when we were putting on the tomato plants, we should kind of layer them on the heap, and we should put on maybe about 3 or 4 inches of old tomato plants. And then we should put on some brown on top of that. We should be very careful not to make a nest for the vermin, basically.
Thinking about the future of compost, I mean, what does it look like both on your farm or even going wider than that, going nationally or even globally? What do you think is the future of compost? What's it looking like? If you're its marketing executive,
Yeah.
what does it look like?
So it's going to feed the world. It's going to feed the
It's a good
world,
start.
compost. Yeah. And what you see coming through now is you have quite a few companies in the world coming through with some type of a biological stimulant that's made from compost, and they're marketing it in powder form, and you put it into a crop sprayer and you spread it out on your land as a fertility biological stimulant source. And there's people using it on organic farms and non-organic farms. So that's kind of gives you an impression what's going on in this compost world. But I think we should all be making our own compost, because the biology is really should be from our own farm. And where I see is that we are going to define the process of making compost even further. And eventually what we're going to have is the product that we have is going to be very biologically active, accurate. And it might be that we become au fait with reading it under a microscope, and we realize, yes, it is of this biologically active quality that we want. And then we'll be putting that into a crop sprayer, possibly, and we'll be putting it out. We'll be putting a very small quantity of it out over a large acreage, and that will be growing food in the future. That's our future. That's where we're going. They're doing it in Australia, they're using it on 2,000 acres, that type of thing. But I think we're going to really call it home to Ireland.
If you want to meet these farmers and ask them your questions on actions for nature on their farms, please join us for our summer walk series. More details to come on farmingfornature.ie. Meanwhile, if you'd like this podcast, please rate and review. It helps us spread the word.